Thanks, everybody, for coming at this slightly unusual time. Our speaker today is Alexa, or do you prefer Alyosha?
I don't mind.
Okay. Latintsev from the University of Oxford will tell us about quantum vertex algebras and cohomological algebras. So please take it away.
Right. Thank you very much. Hello, everyone, and thanks very much for the invitation to speak. So today I'm going to be speaking about some projects I've been thinking about for the past year or so that were related to certain like notions of deformations of vertex algebras. And okay, so I'll do that. And then if I have time at the end, I'll also talk about some projects in some slightly different areas I've been thinking about. So so all of the background concepts in this talk like themselves come from physics, and even defining them was sort of like a monumental like achievement in like the 80s and 90s. So like all three concepts, so quantum groups, quantum vertex algebras and cohomological algebras, there's like a large like ecosystem of like results relating them to each other. And they also like link into other areas of mathematics, like especially in geometric representation theory and enumerative invariance. But these are also like quite difficult objects, and they're definitely like, they're not anywhere near being like fully understood. So after introducing these things, I'm going to talk about the main result in my paper from last year, which is a link between sort of all three objects. So I'll sketch the proof and talk a little about the technical machinery, the bivariant oil class, I developed. So approximately it's some sort of torus localization needed for the context. And I'll also say how to use these sort of techniques to like computation applications to other cohors. Right. And then right at the end, I'll talk about some other projects trying to sort of tease out quantum groups from geoalgebras of deformed vertex algebras. Okay, right. If there are no questions, I will continue. Okay, so, right. Cohomological algebras were defined in about 2010 after a lot of effort from a lot of people and sort of a lot of false starts. So the definition is meant to formalize the physics notion of an algebra of BPS states. So I'll quickly review what that is, just for people who don't know. So attached to any n equals two supersymmetric QFT, there's a vector space of sort of BPS states. So take, for example, the 1D example attached to a Riemannian manifold M. Its Hilbert space is differential forms, which has an action of Laplacian exterior derivative and its adjoint. These together form a super Lie algebra. And the kernel of these two square zero supercharges is sort of by definition the vector space of BPS states, which is by Hodge's theory just cohomology of the Riemannian manifold M. So this is a one-dimensional example. I know this is an algebra by cut product, and this is sort of a part of a general expectation that these spaces should have an algebra structure. So a more involved example, this is the thing which appears in Kuncievich and Soibum's paper, is type 2A string theory. So this is a 10-dimensional theory. But then if you compactify along a Clavier threefold, then this gives you a 4-dimensional theory. So there's inside such a theory, there's a notion of D-brain, and then which is, I mean, very loosely, it's sort of like a higher dimensional analog of like a string sitting inside this 10-dimensional manifold. And there's also a notion of a BPS D-brain. And then the space of BPS states is something like the set of these BPS D-brains. So these D-brains can sort of like move around and merge, which sort of, I don't know, on a very loose level might give this vector space an algebra structure. Okay, so given this like physics sketch, how might you make this mathematical? So I think there's an expectation that D-brains should correspond to elements in the derived category of coherent sheaves on this Clavier threefold. And this sort of moving around and merging should correspond to extensions in this category. So for reasons that will become clear, I'm going to drop this derived category bit because it's like very, people have not got this to work quite yet. And I'm just going to consider the Beeling category coherent sheaves. Okay, so you don't actually have to take coherent sheaves. Let's just pick any Beeling category for now. Let's say coherent sheaves on a scheme, representation on a quiver or something like that. So the first attempt to define something like this is by Hall So the isomorphism classes of objects in A is almost an algebra by this, well, by sort of extension. So if there's an extension sort of A to E to A prime, then sort of define A times A prime as E. I mean, of course, this is meaningless. Like, there's like more than one extension, so you might choose to sum them instead, which gives you something closer to an algebra structure. But then there's like, this is not quite the correct thing to do. You have to add in weights, which sort of measure the like Hom spaces between these objects and the categories. And then if the derived Hom spaces in this category are finite, this gives you the definition of the whole algebra. Okay, so this is, yeah. So this is like the grandfather of cohomological whole algebras. But it's not quite the right thing to do to sort of get the mathematical notion of algebra VPS states. What you should do, and what Concierge and Solomon did, is that you place a set of objects in this abelian category with the stack, so it's the geometric object, whose points correspond to objects in A. So the algebra structure comes from this correspondence. So there's a moduli stack parameterizing short exact sequences in this abelian category. And then there's a map to the product of the moduli space of itself, and which is sort of take the two outer terms, and also a map to the moduli stack, just taking the middle term. And then sort of like, if you have 2 points in here, you can take its preimage under Q. This gives you, okay, so Q is not, well, this will give you like a subspace of short exact sequences, and then you can push this forward. And okay, so this sort of, and because it's a correspondence rather than an actual map, this isn't going to give you a map on points, but on cohomology, because, and this is precisely what the cohomological whole algebra is. So, yeah, so the cohomological whole algebra is, as a vector space, the cohomology of this moduli stack, and its algebra structure is pull-push. Okay, so a technical point, which is, okay, in fact, very important, that this only works if the category is dimension one or less. So coherency is on a curve, representation is on a quiver, or something like that. So this is because if you want to push forward cohomologically by a map, the map has to be proper. Okay, it's fine, this map is always proper, but it also has to be quasi-smooth. So its fibers have to be approximately sort of like smooth spaces, which is only the case if the dimension of the category is less than equal to one. There are fixes for this. So if the dimension is say less than equal to two, you can use Brill-Moore homology instead of cohomology, and then you can get an algebra structure. This is not actually what we want to use, because this Brill-Moore homology will not have a vertex algebra structure. Also, in the Clebier-3 case, this is not quite the right vector space you want to consider. You want to consider not the actual cohomology of the moduli stack, but the cohomology of the moduli stack with values in some perverse sheaf, which is what Concierge and Solomon do. Okay, so now that I've introduced what cohorts are, like, why should one care about them? So, I mean, the basic reason is that they lie at the intersection of a lot of interesting mathematics. So, for instance, in the Clavier-3 case, the dimensions of these vector spaces are something like the DT invariance of this this Clavier-3 category. Secondly, there's like by results of Yang and Zhao and others, these cohors are of pre-projective algebras are quantum groups. And there's also a lot of evidence of like really deep and interesting connections between these cohors and W vertex algebras, or rather the associative algebra of modes attached to them. Okay. So the physics heuristic as to why there should be a relation between cohors and vertex algebras is something like this. I might butcher this. This is sort of, I've not managed to find it in the literature. So essentially, like, if you have a QFT, which sort of has like one holomorphic direction, one sort of real dimension of, and a bunch of others in some compatible way, you should then expect that from the holomorphic direction, you get a vertex algebra structure, from the real direction, you get an associative algebra, and so on. And then, like, this is the justifications as to why you should expect relations to vertex algebras will tend to have this shape. Okay. I'll now move on to introduce what a vertex algebra is. So as a toy model for vertex algebras, put them into historical perspective first. So vertex algebras are a math version of 2D CFTs. These were the first QFT to be mathematicized, and there's by now like a huge amount of like interesting results relating relating this structure to like geometric Langlands type results. So there's a toy model for people in the audience who might not have met vertex algebras. So in a QFT, it models sort of particles moving around in ambient space. Okay. So in 2D CFT, you might want to consider strings moving around in ambient space. So there's ingoing strings, outgoing strings, and then the interaction traces out some Riemann surface. So to model this data, you just need the vector space of possible asymptotic states of these strings, and a structure to sort of model how these, as these strings sort of move around the Riemann surface, how they merge. And you do this using the so-called field map. So this measures the effect of adding a state alpha at a point z to another state at the point zero. So this is essentially all the data you need, plus some commutativity relation. If you add alpha at one point, then alpha prime at another point. So this has got to commute in some way. Okay, so this is approximately what the definition of a vertex algebra is. I'll give some examples in just a second. So there's actually a definition which more directly uses the geometry of the Riemann surface. Just Bayes and Drinfeld's factorization algebras, in which case this weak commutativity is simply, so this just corresponds to, it's a co-commutative co-algebra in some category, in some symmetric monoidal category, which is something like sheaves on some geometric category associated with this. So D modules on the Rolle space. If that means anything to you, just, if not, just ignore it. Okay, so some examples of vertex algebras. So commutative algebras are vertex algebras. These are vertex algebras which with no interaction terms. So the fields have no dependence on Z. Differential algebras, so algebras, commutative algebras with a derivation partial, are vertex algebras, the field map given by this. So these are the vertex algebras with holomorphic interaction term. So the OPs have no singularities. So an example of this, you can take the space of four more disks inside a scheme, then its ring of functions is a vertex algebra of this form. So this makes sort of the toy model we sketched in the last slide precise, because this is actually like a vertex algebra. Okay. So the most important basic example of vertex algebra is the Heisenberg vertex algebra. So as a vector space, it's a Fock space on the modes of a string moving inside A1. And just as there's a generators and relations definition for algebras, there's also a generators and relations definition for vertex algebra. So equivalently, Heisenberg is generated by one field subject to these relations. So this is the definition of a Heisenberg vertex algebra. So it's like a boson moving in on the affine line. So you can replace that affine line with an arbitrary Lie algebra G. This is the Wessamino-Witten 2D CFT, or the vertex algebra analog of it. So it's generated by fields for each element in the Lie algebra subject to these relations. This is an invariant bilinear form on the Lie algebra, and this is just the bracket in the Lie algebra. Okay. And this is the thing that tends to come up in Langlands. But say instead we wanted to take the torus. So we had a lattice lambda, and you take the quotient of affine space by lambda. Then the space of loops inside this, the homotopy class of loops inside the torus, it is lambda. And it turns out there is a, by the chiral quantization of this, is the Heisenberg vertex algebra, sort of direct summed lambda many times. And turns out this thing has a lattice vertex algebra structure. So the vertex algebras attached to moduli stacks, which I'm going to introduce in just a second, all tend to have this flavor. So they may not be exactly lattice vertex algebras, but they're something like that. They might be subalgebras of lattice vertex algebras or quotients or something like that. This isn't a theorem. This is just like examples tend to have this form. Okay. So now I'll go on to talk about the recent construction of like Joyce, from a couple of years ago. So let A be any abelian or triangulated category. Then then the homology of its moduli stack of objects is a commutative algebra just by the direct sum map. So this gives the a dumb vertex algebra structure of the homology. It's just a just a commutative algebra. So if the caching is k-linear, then you get an action of k-star on the objects, and so an action of BGM on the moduli stack. So that's just a geometric analog of the action of k-star on objects. And then if you take the generator of H2 of BGM, so this is a polynomial algebra, well, in tau, then this gives you a derivation by pushing forward. And so this makes the homology into a differential algebra, so a holomorphic vertex algebra. Okay, so far, these two steps, you don't actually see any of the morphisms in A. So a lot of the abelian or triangulation category structure is invisible to these structures. So what you're going to do is to like rectify this, is you're going to do a Borchardt's bi-character twist of using a perfect complex theta on the moduli stack times itself. Okay, so this theta is required to satisfy a bunch of axioms, which I'll flip through quickly on the next page. But the main example you should have in your head is you take the tautological complex, whose fiber above a pair of points is just the derived Hom space between these two points, and then you symmetrize it. So you take that plus like the swapped around version, dualized. Okay, then it turns out this this thing gives you a vertex coalgebra structure. Okay, so what is this? E of theta is the Euler class of theta. And act is this is the pullback fire, the action map. Okay, so the Euler class of theta is not actually defined unless theta is a vector bundle. However, if it is a vector bundle, then this thing is equal to this by the splitting principle. And then you can simply make this as a definition in general, because the Chern classes of perfect complexes are perfectly well-defined objects. Okay, so this is the definition. And these signs are, okay, I'm being a bit imprecise, but like this has something to do with orientation data. Okay, so now, just to summarize, this is Joyce's vertex algebra structure. When you do this to the derived category of representations of a quiver, you get a lattice vertex algebra on K naught of representations of that quiver. Okay, so I've explained co-morphic algebras and vertex algebras, but I've still not explained where the word quantum comes in my title. And the thing is that that taking theta equal to the X complex is really the most natural thing. So symmetrizing it is interesting, and it relates to the cotangent bundle of the moduli stack, and might have something to do with doubling for cohals. But the cohal really, in this case, wants theta to be the X complex. And the problem that unless A is Calabi-Yau, this thing is not going to be a vertex algebra structure. So there's a bunch of axioms that I'm just going to flip through in the next slide, and this doesn't quite satisfy the axioms. It will be approximately a vertex algebra, but it'll be something which is not weakly co-commutative, or weakly commutative if you're going into the vertex algebra. Okay. So it turns out this is actually a good thing, because quantum vertex algebras and quantum groups are, okay, if you're biased, you might think of them as like being like more interesting objects of vertex algebras and algebras. And okay, so I'll talk a little bit about that side of the story now. Okay, so to introduce what a quantum vertex algebra is, I'll just briefly recap what a quantum group is. So quantum groups are the answer to the question of like how you deform U of G. So for many years, this was thought a sort of dead question, because U of G admits no deformations as an algebra. But then Drinfeld came along with the observation that viewing it as an algebra was the wrong thing to do. You want to instead view it as a quasi-triangular bi-algebra or quantum group. So I'll put the definition up in a second, but it basically says that you should remember the co-product structure on U of G. And a quantum group is a bi-algebra, so product and co-product, with an R matrix, which is somewhat here, which measures the failure of co-commutativity. Okay, so this might seem like a pretty random definition, but like sort of morally what's happening here And this is essentially an equivalent definition, is that its category of representations is a Brayton monoidal category. Okay, so Drinfeld proved that in this category of quantum groups, U of G admits essentially unique a unique deformation, one parameter deformation, UH bar of G, or its sort of cousin UQ of G. If we're thinking about the philosophy that the category of representations is a more natural object, you might like the Cauchy-Lustig equivalence, which says that its category of representations is equivalent to a certain category of sheaves on the affine Grassmannian. So this relates quantum groups to WZW 2D CFTs. Quantum groups just show up everywhere. They show up in knot invariants, differential equations, factorization algebras. They're very like ubiquitous objects. Right. So here's the actual definition of a quantum group. We'll go know it. The important thing here is a compatibility here between the algebra structure and the coalgebra structure. The main reason I'm showing this is so that when I flick to the next slide about quantum vertex algebras, it doesn't seem like such an unnatural object. Okay. So a quantum vertex algebra is a compatible algebra and vertex coalgebra structure, and where the vertex coalgebra structure need not be weakly co-commutative. So and as before, you need an R matrix satisfying various axioms. Okay. So this is the important part, and these are the axioms. So there's a heuristic, which not literally correct, that a quantum group is the same thing as an E2 coalgebra in E1 algebras. You might think of the quantum vertex algebra should be something like making the E2 direction holomorphic. Which might sort of motivate this definition. Right. Also, maybe I should give a little bit of historical context. There are a lot of competing, there are a lot of different like ways to deform vertex algebras. So there's like a version by Frenkel-Reshetykin, there's a version by Etingov and Kashdan. And so at the end, we'll see another way of deforming vertex algebras. Basically, all the big questions you might ask about quantum vertex algebras and like deformed vertex algebras still open, although you would expect that they should be like very deep objects of connections to quantum groups and vertex algebras. So, okay, now I'll turn to, is there anything in the chat? Right. So now I'll talk about my result about quantum vertex algebras and cohomological algebras. So let A be the category of coherent sheaves on a curve or representations of a quiver. Then the result is that this thing is a quantum vertex algebra, i.e., an analog of a quasi-triangular biallgebra. Okay. So. This is a result about sort of like genuine vertex algebras, quantum vertex algebras, as opposed to something like the algebra of modes on a vertex algebra, which is the shape of a lot of results relating cohors and vertex algebras. Okay, so I will give a sketch about the shape of the proof, and then I'll talk about the techniques of the proof and like how you could use them to like get computational things out of it. Okay, so the non-trivial part of the proof is sort of relating the cohort structure and the vertex coalgebra structure. So you want a commutative diagram like this, which is just like the most interesting part of the quantum vertex algebra definition. So it turns out that like all these grayed out relations about the R matrix are in fact quite easy to show. That they just like follow based quite easily. They're not hard to show. So why might this diagram commute? So in very broad sweeping terms, it's because of this. Remember that this vertex coalgebra structure was defined in terms of the Euler class of theta, which is this X complex. Okay, and so to make this diagram commute, you better express the cohor in terms of the Euler class of theta too. So, and the basic reason you might expect this not to be hopeless is because if you take this correspondence between m times n and m, then the tangent complex of p is the same thing as theta. support lack of theta. Okay, so this is the sketch version of the proof, and the R matrix that makes this thing into a quantum vertex algebra is, so it's this factor that you cup with in the quantum vertex algebra structure, divided by its symmetrized version. So this thing will just be one if theta were symmetric, as expected. Okay. So one thing I'll remark is that if theta is symmetric, this thing is equal to one. This means that in the Clavier-1 case, this thing is a genuine vertex algebra. So for instance, elliptic curves or representations of a symmetric quiver. Okay. Okay, are there any questions?
So maybe I just got stuck somewhere when you were telling us what a quantum vertex algebra was. Yeah. So, because I haven't really seen it before. Yeah. So I would have said a vertex algebra is morally a factorization algebra, holomorphic on that depends on one complex parameter.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me that this quantum vertex algebra looks like it has, if I'm reading it correctly, it has an associative structure in, so that's like one kind of one topological direction,
yeah,
and a co-multiplication which has a holomorphic direction. So this seems to be like a richer thing. Is it true that it's more than a vertex algebra?
So I think I was maybe cramming too much into this. So firstly, the definition you could make is a vertex co-algebra structure, which is not weakly co-commutative, but its failure to be weakly co-commutative is measured by this R matrix R of Z.
Okay.
So it's much like it's like non-co-commutative co-algebra. And then I think adding in this extra multiplication might be sort of might just make things a bit more confusing. So I think if you want to come up with like a factor, I'm sort of interested in like how you come up with a factorization analog of this, but I think if you want to come up with a factorization analog of this, you'd just consider not this multiplication, but like it would be, you'd just consider this thing.
Okay. I think what I'm trying to ask is a vertex algebra an example of a quantum vertex algebra?
No, because quantum vertex algebra it's like a bi-algebra.
Can I ask you a related question?
Uh-huh.
For some reason, my video can't be turned on. I don't know why.
Oh, that's okay.
If you take the linear dual of a quantum vertex algebra, mm-hmm, is it a vertex algebra or is it something not a vertex algebra?
So a quantum vertex algebra is a... So it's this thing which is like a weakly co-associative vertex algebra.
There's a million different languages around vertex algebras, and people speak different ones.
Oh, sorry.
So I'm not sure we're speaking the same thing. If I take its dual, you know, Borchers, whatever, wrote down what a vertex algebra is. Is it one of those?
No. So it is something that does not have weak commutativity. You might notice a field algebra or non-local vertex algebra. So it's got weak associativity but not commutativity.
Okay, so then it will not be a factorization algebra on a curve.
No, so it will not. Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought there was some, there might have been some, like, if you like add in a gerb or something, there might be a way to make this work, but I don't know.
Possibly, okay. I just wanted to clarify that. Okay.
Okay.
But so morally, like, I guess WZW is like the dual, or Katsumudi is probably up to some question of duals, an example of quantum vertex algebra, because Katsumudi algebra has an extra hop co-multiplication or something.
Yes, but that under which the level adds, so level zero.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason I was asking this is I was trying to understand, like, it seems like quantum vertex algebra is not an example of vertex algebra, and vertex algebra is not an example of quantum vertex algebra, which is maybe the answer to my question. But my question was going to be, in your theorem, was your theorem in some sense either strictly weaker or strictly stronger than proving that such and such was a vertex algebra?
Ah, I see. Okay. So I think maybe the less confusing thing would be to call it like a quasi-triangular vertex bi-algebra. But okay, so I'll ask your actual question. I'll answer your question. This thing is a vertex algebra if you use the symmetrized theta complex, but that doesn't speak nicely to the Koha structure. If you want something that speaks nicely to the Koha structure, i.e. this commutes, you need to use theta equal to the X complex, in which case the vertex algebra structure, if you dualize it, is you get an associative vertex algebra as opposed to a commutative, a weakly associative vertex algebra as opposed to a weakly commutative vertex algebra, i.e. vertex algebra. Does that answer the question?
I think so.
I'm sorry to I don't want to derail you too much, but I have another kind of similar question.
Mm-hmm.
So Drinfeld wrote down the definition of a quasi-Hopf algebra.
Yeah.
It's not a bi-algebra because it fails to be co-associative.
Mm-hmm.
The failure to be co-associative is measured by an OR matrix. Well,
yes.
I recall. So it seems a little similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
So the nice thing about Drinfeld's definition is that the category of modules had a beautiful structure. It was a monoidal category. So you can ask in your definition, if I take the category of modules, is this the structure you need to make it a chiral category?
So this is basically a question I have wondered but not seriously pursued.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Yes. If chiral category is the correct analog, like factorization analog of like greater than monoidal category, then I would be willing to say yes, probably.
So can I ask one other version, just so I can try to fit this notion, this new notion, into my head? I just want to sort of, is there like, tell me if I'm correct or not. I know a construction called Katzmoody that inputs some Lie algebra with some nice data and produces vertex algebra. Is there a sort of version of that construction that inputs some sort of quantum group and outputs quantum vertex algebra?
Quantum groups, quantum vertex algebra.
Or is that the wrong direction to try to expect these adjectives to match?
I think this question has more of the you're saying there's like a quantum Koha structure?
I don't know. I mean the following question. Is there another example of quantum vertex algebra that's somehow maybe cheaper, less expensive than Koha?
Not that I know of. It's very easy to construct a vertex coalgebra structure with an R matrix without the equivalent of Koha. So basically, like Joyce's examples, like give you thousands of these, just attached to abelian categories. All you need to do is just like add like Q weights to the theta complex, which introduces Q into the interaction terms. But I don't know. But I don't know any natural ways to introduce like other algebra structures onto the same vector space. I mean, this is the only example that I know.
Okay.
I mean, people talk about Q-deform W algebras. Are those examples of quantum W algebras?
No. So there's like two. Could you ask this question again after I get to my last slide? There's like two ways to deform the notion of vertex algebra. One is to like switch off weak commutativity and like add an R matrix, and the other way is to like add Qs everywhere, which are for vertex algebra is not sort of examples. We'll just see this at the end, I think. All right. Thanks everyone for the questions. Is there any more? All right. Okay. So I will. I'll talk in a bit about the technical sort of needed to get this stuff to work. But like, firstly, I'll talk about the computational stuff, how you might actually prove this, and then using these sort of ideas to compute cohars. So the basic idea is this: so you consider the split locus of objects which are direct sums of two two separate objects. So this corresponds to just like the direct sum map on moduli stacks. So this is an injection on cohomology. So if you want to compute the cohar, i.e. push-pull, pull-push, it's enough to pull-push-pull because this thing is injective. Okay, so obviously if you have a diagram like this, natural thing to do is to take the tenet, is to take the fiber product. And this fiber product parameterizes pairs of a short exact sequence plus a splitting of the middle term. So this is not the same thing as a splitting of the short exact sequence as a sum of two short exact sequences. Indeed, there's a GM action on this space where GM acts by weight one here and weight minus one here. And it's, this point is fixed under this action precisely if this thing is a direct sum of two short exact sequences. Okay, so we have a diagram like this where the torus acts on everything, okay, except these two. We have a diagram like this, where the torus acts on everything. It acts on the outside trivially and acts here. And then this is the fixed point. Okay. So now, it's sort of time to apply Bean localization. So just sort of accept for now torus localization in this context for granted. So if you had that, then if you want to commute this, if you wanted to compute this push-pull map, then okay, this is the same as pull-pull-push because this thing is a fiber product. Okay, and now you apply Abelian localization to get this thing is the same thing as this. So just pull-push, where you have a correction factor, one is the oil class. Okay, and then this gives you a way of computing. Like this relates the cohol to the oil cost of theta, because I won't be this precise right now. But the oil cost of this null complex is like well, this null complex is essentially theta. So it's sort of theta on one copy of this, and it's like theta swapped around on the other complex, the short exact sequences. Okay, so this is why you might expect cohols and oil cost of the theta to be related to each other. Okay. So now this idea generalizes to a way to compute cohort products. So I'll just like recreate like conceived Solomon results just to show you how this sort of stuff works. So if you just consider the dimension zero category of finite dimensional vector spaces and use instead of the split locus being pairs of objects, you consider sort of direct sums of line bundles or direct sums of rank one objects mapping into the whole moduli stack. Then you get this diagram. So the fixed locus is labeled by partitions of this set into size of subsets of size n and m. And okay, this is, and then the outside is like incredibly simple. So this thing is just a union of identities, and then this thing is, I mean, it's simple. It's just pullback of computing pullbacks on cohomology is quite easy for moduli stacks. Okay, and so this is the hallmark of sort of Abelian localization. It reduces like tough geometric problems to like combinatorial problems. And indeed, like if you run this through like formally, you recover the formula in Conceived Solomon for the cohar product in terms of Chern roots. So it's just the shuffle product divided by a one over oil class term. Okay. And likewise, you get the same thing for Cashier representations of the quiver. Okay. Okay. So you can do the same thing for curve cohars. And this is something which is new to the paper. So when you take A to be coherent cheese on a curve, we want to sort of use the same idea. So the split locus should be direct sums of rank one objects. However, the situation here is actually a lot more complicated because they're interesting rank zero coherent sheaves. So the split locus we have to consider is actually this. So a bunch of sums of rank zero coherent sheaves and rank one coherent sheaves. Okay, and so the map from the split locus into the moduli stack is injected from cohomology, and so this gives you the analog of the Chern roots in the previous example. Okay, and so okay, the main computational result here is that this gives you a simple combinatorial expression for the cohort product of a curve in terms of the three sort of rank less than each one cohort products, so the rank 0, 0, 0, 1, and 1, 0. So much in the similar way that the cohort of a point was just a shuffle product. Okay. And these things are much easier to work out. So the rank 0, 0, 1 is a symmetric algebra. The rank 1, 0, well, okay, there is a stratification on these spaces. And on each strata, it's a symmetric algebra. And the rank 1, 0, that's a little bit more tricky, and I've not managed to work out what it is yet. But this is like a massive simplification of the cohort of of a curve. Okay. And the last thing I'll say about this before moving on to the bivariant oil class is that these methods could potentially work for other code, like other code multiple Hall algebras, for instance, like Brill-Moore or like critical code R. Okay. So I'll now talk about how to meat of the paper. So, okay. Something I forgot to say was that the main problem with applying abelian localization here is that this space in the middle is singular. So, so you can't naively apply abelian localization to it. And then I'll now talk about like how to rectify this. Okay. So very briefly, what is abelian localization? So, okay. As a reminder, so in the 80s, Atiyah and Bott, they showed that the equivalent cohomologies of a space of the torus action and its fixed locus are essentially the same. So this became like a central result and tool in like Gromov-Witten theory, DT invariance, like supersymmetry, which is where abelian localization first appeared. There's also a folklore idea that if you apply abelian localization to the loop space of schemes, this gives you Gross and Deep Riemann Rock for schemes, where oil class is replaced by top class. Okay. So as we've seen, like for the Cohar application, you want to develop some sort of like some sort of abelian localization for this more general singular spaces. So the key object here is the bivariant oil class, which I'll define in just a second. So these techniques will be applicable to sort of generalized cohomology theories, because fundamentally all of this stuff is sort of happening motivically, i.e. using the six functors. It's a lot more general than previous results, like Rabe and Pande, which like abelian localization only worked for like Chow homology. And it also like is a lot sort of cleaner because it uses directly sort of ideal Kahn's virtual classes of maps of like derived stacks rather than perfect extraction theories. Okay. So how do these constructions actually work? I'll give a brief sketch of this. So in topology, remember the oil class was defined by the Gaussian sequence. So if E is a vector bundle over Z, then there's the Gaussian sequence there's the Gaussian sequence, where this map is multiplication by a homology class on Z called the oil class. So this is sort of definitionally what the oil class is. This Gaussian sequence chiefifies to give you a distinguished triangle of sheaves on the space Z. Equivalently, there's a Gaussian sequence in like holonomic D modules in L-adic sheaves, something. So the Gaussian sequence also exists for any closed embedding Z into X. And whatever the bivariant oil class is, this thing will simply be multiplication by the bivariant oil class. Okay. So the definition of the bivariant oil class is that, so you take the bivariant homology, this definition is this. So if you have a map F from X to Y, then its bivariant homology is just the cohomology of F upper shriek of the constant sheaf. Okay. And then you sort of define it analogously to the oil class. Okay, this is it. And so I prove that like it satisfies like all the relations you would expect. So it's functorial with respect to base change. Something slightly more interesting, if you have a distinguished triangle of perfect complexes on Z, then you get some form of Whitney sum. So if these were vector bundles, this would just be Whitney sum, but now there's some sort of like perfect complex Whitney sum. So crucially, you need to be working in the localized equivariant cohomology. And this is part of like a general philosophy here that like, if you work in localized equivariant cohomology, this sort of like kills the singular data. And it behaves exactly as smooth schemes. Okay. So thirdly, there's an abelian localization result for this. Okay. However, this is not actually enough if you want to apply abelian localization in practice, because if you want to apply abelian localization, you want like a genuine, you want to like have a genuine cohomology class here. So you want to like, And so in the background, in the smooth case, the exponential map, like there's the exponential map, which sort of relates the neighborhood of Z and X with the normal bundle to Z and X. So this is, and then this sort of relates the bivariant oil class in that case to the oil class of the normal bundle. So there is actually a cohomological shadow of the exponential map which exists in algebraic geometry. So this is the so-called specialization map, which is a map from the bivariant cohomology of Z and X to the bivariant cohomology of Z in the normal bundle. And this is the thing which generalizes to the singular case. So there's a localized specialization map. So this is something like a cohomological shadow of the exponential map of like singular spaces. And it intertwines the bivariant oil class of X with the bivariant oil class of the normal bundle. And moreover, if this map is quasi-smooth, then it also intertwines their fundamental classes. And then this precisely is what you need to get cohar products to work. So this is actually the statement. So if you have a cohar diagram like this, where the torus, which is torus equivariant, the torus acts everywhere trivially except for in the middle, then you get this, you can compute the cohar product in terms of this upper sort of cohar product and this correction factor, which is precisely what we needed technically earlier to compute these cohar products and get these new like curve cohars. Right, does anyone have any questions? All right. I will now move on to speaking about another project, about quantum groups from deformed vertex algebras. So I'm going to sketch a related project to understand the relation between quantum groups and deformed vertex algebras. So I'm not actually going to define what a deformed vertex algebra is, but it's something like it's like a Q deformation of the notion of vertex algebra. So it has poles at like Z equals QW, Z equals Q squared W, and so on, as opposed to just Z equals W. Right. So firstly, how do you get normal enveloping algebras out of vertex algebras? Well, okay, so you take the WZW vertex algebra, which is approximately loops inside G star, and you take the Zhu algebra. So the Zhu algebra for the associated graded algebra is functions on G star. And then if you don't take the associated graded, then the Zhu algebra of this vertex algebra is the universal enveloping algebra. Okay. So, right. So now, what if you want to do this for quantum groups? So if we manage to get quantum groups as Zhu algebras of some sort of deformed vertex algebras, then this would be strong evidence. Well, so firstly, this like notion of like deformed vertex algebra is sort of morally correct. And it will be sort of like, I believe the first place that quantum groups appeared in these sort of contexts.
So can I ask a quick question?
Of course.
So quantum groups with which structure? Just as associative algebras? Or?
Yeah, just as associative algebras this time.
But aren't they, I mean, as an associative algebra for generic Q, it's the same as UG? Because UG is rigid. There's no small deformations. It's only at roots of unity that you find something different.
I believe this is this should be true for arbitrary Q.
I see. So the interesting part will be when you take Q to be a really yes. Interesting. Okay, good.
Yes. Okay. So wait, where was I? Okay. So the conjecture is, and the thing that I'm working on at the moment, is that you can get this to work using free field realizations. So, okay, so I'll recap sort of the state of the subject. So if G is an ADE-Lie algebra, then Frenkel, Jing, and Wang in the 90s, they construct an isomorphism from the lattice vertex algebra of the co-character lattice to the basic representation of U of G hat. Which is sort of the level one vertex algebra, the simple one. Okay, and this induces a map from the Zhu algebra of this thing into the Zhu algebra of the lattice vertex algebra. So they did this sort of like with explicit formulas. So they also quantize this result. So they get a map of UQ of G hat modules, and they interpret it by they sort of do this with like explicit formulas. And so this is where the geometry of moduli stacks might come in handy. So lattice VOA is just the homology of this moduli stack of quiver representations of the associated Dinkin quiver. And and you could also, and you can sort of quantize this. Like there's a, it's very easy to attach to any abelian category, just like quantize, like get an associated quantum vertex algebra just by adding Q weights to this complex theta. Yeah, and so one benefit of these like Joyce deformed vertex algebras is firstly that there's lots of examples of them. So for instance, this one. And secondly, there's like also quite easy to define what their Joule algebras are. So you can define Joule algebras of them too. So the idea would be that this map of Frankel, Jing, and Wang, if you apply Joule algebras to it, would give you a map from UQ of G into the Joule algebra of the, homology of the moduli stack. So far I've been able to interpret the so-called like Q vertex operators, which is what Frankel, Jing, and Wang used to define this map. So I've been able to interpret them in terms of the field maps of quantum vertex algebras over here. So this is almost a map of quantum vertex algebras, except that it's sort of unclear whether this thing is a quantum vertex algebra or something slightly different. And I've also been able to give a geometric description of the coefficients of this, of these field algebras. Yes. So what's left to do would be to show that this thing is a deformed vertex algebra also, whose U algebra is UQ of G. And so this would then exhibit this map. Okay. So that's the current state of this. So to end, I'll summarize everything I said so far. So the main result is that dimension one cohorts are vertex algebra analogs of quasi-triangle bi-algebras. So this is a step in like uncovering like this expected relation between cohorts and vertex algebras. And to my knowledge, this is like the first time like these like quantum vertex algebras have appeared in the literature. And it also might be a step in like understanding like quantum vertex algebras themselves, because like these are still like very understudied objects. And it's also worth like re-emphasizing that it's like genuinely like a relation between quantum vertex algebras, not just its algebra of modes. So there's a construction of the bivariant oil class, which makes all the technical machinery work. This is like what a lot of the paper is, getting this to work. And this gives you like the tools to compute, like give new formulas for cohorts. And then, like as I just said, like there's ongoing work sort of trying to show that this quantum thing is a Joule algebra. Okay. So I'll talk a bit before ending about further questions and other current work. So naturally, I'm trying to work to see whether these like cohort techniques can be used more to compute cohorts more generally. So for instance, like cohort, like Drell-Moore homology cohorts, or maybe even critical cohorts, but I've not really thought about that yet. I'm also collaborating with a bunch of people to see if my techniques on bivariant oil classes can be used to help understand abelian localization for more general classes of Artin stacks. And also one thing I would have loved to speak about is another project in which I'm trying to understand the free field realizations of Beam, Magnelli, and Rastelli in terms of geometric representation theory, but specifically W algebras. So I'd be able to make a bit of progress on this, and there's only like so many minutes in the talk, and there's not really any way to like coherently put this in this talk. So maybe if people have questions at the end about that, that'd be nice. And then finally, there's also this business about the doubling construction and the drive category. So I think understanding more about the potential relations between these two would be great, because it might shed a light on the doubling, which turns up in the sort of in the constructions which show up in cohars and quantum groups and cohars and W algebras in the literature. Okay, so I think that's all I have to say. And yeah, so thanks for listening.
All right, thanks. Are there any more questions?
Well, I have a question about the notion of Joule algebra for deformed vertex algebra. So is it like always well defined? Is it always associative?
So it's always a associative algebra. And the definition is this formulaic definition is actually the same. So you just take like V divided by what's called like O2 of V, and then like the same algebra product.
So is it known, in how many examples is it known what you get? So for instance, I mean, I'm interested to know, for instance, there are these algebras defined by Arakawa, which sort of where the Joule algebra gives more precisely maybe associated gradient of the Joule algebra gives the algebra functions on some Morta Chikawa varieties, and this algebra defined by Arakawa, they do have initial Q deformation, for example. So I was wondering if
I'm not aware, because I think this definition is essentially constructed so as to make this definition is constructed so as to make these abelian cash green moduli homologies into examples of such deformed vertex algebras. And so this definition is actually quite a new one, so I'm not sure if it's actually been related to much else. And like, this is, I think, why this result might be particularly interesting. But yeah, so probably answer your question. I don't know about these Arakawa algebras.
Are there some interesting examples where this thing is computed for? Let me ask you the following question. When you say that you want to get UQ of G as a Joule algebra, what exactly do you mean by UQ of G? So what kind? I mean, are you working with generic Q, or if you're not working with generic Q, so do you have any expectations? What form of UQ of G you want to get?
I don't have expectations of what form of UQ of G I'll get.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, at the moment, this project is sort of quite computational, and I've not any conceptual reason to expect one form over the other.
Okay.
They're sort of experimental, as opposed to.
All right.
Can you say a couple of words about the doubling construction? Doubling construction you mentioned here.
Oh, yeah. This map from this. I've written it down for SL2. But there's like a general version for a general G in the Lean Svetanovich series. And this is meant to come from like some sort of. Morally, this is if you take the n equals 2 SCFT attached to Lie algebra G, this is the thing that you get like over the over the Higgs branch. And then this is the thing that you get over an open subset of the Higgs branch. Right, so that's sort of morally what it is. And to, okay, and so how you relate it to W algebras is that you, so there's a construction of quantizations of nilpotent orbits. So for instance, if you take like the minimal nilpotent orbit in SL2, which is precisely this Higgs branch. And so this involves some, so, yeah, so basically what you do is that you take this this construction of quantization of nilpotent orbits and you affinize it. So you like, you construct a vertex algebra analog of it. The main content in this this construction of W algebras, quantizations of nilpotent orbits is, I think it'll take a little bit too long to explain, but like the main component is there's some Fourier transform in there. Maybe I should give a reference. So it's essentially that there's a thesis of Mihov where he constructs quantizations of nilpotent orbits. So essentially, you take like two different Lagrangians inside the minimal nilpotent orbit, and you consider the two different spaces of translates between them, and then one of them is P1. In the SL2 case, so this is where the map from the critical level V crit of SL2 comes from, and one of them is like the cotangent model of C star, which is where this lattice vertex algebra comes from, and then there's some Fourier transform map which relates them.
Sorry, I was asking about the doubling. So you mentioned doubling construction.
Well, I thought you said W algebra.
No, doubling.
Oh, doubling. Yeah. So basically, it's okay. So there's this expectation that if you remember that like how doubling usually goes in cohors is that you have this like cohor defined as the Brillouin homology or cohomology of some moduli stack, and then if you want to get quantum groups or something out of it, this cohor is actually only the positive half. And you have to do some sort of doubling construction. And so I could just write a quick example in the case where this abelian category is just finite dimensional vector spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So so the vertex algebra looks like something. Okay. So it turns out that DB of A. Actually, its vertex algebra is the lattice vertex algebra in one variable. So it sort of looks like this.
Yes.
And it turns out that this thing looks like this. So it's generated vacuum, sort of generated by b minus 1 to the n vacuum, b minus 1 to the n, b minus 2 to the m vacuum. Okay, and so the idea is that by including A into DBA, sort of just by the natural way, and including A sort of into A shifted by 1 inside DBA,
mm-hmm.
you would get this thing, so, and so on. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the idea is that if you took these two together, and maybe you have to add in like a Heisenberg algebra, you get the whole thing. So,
how does that exactly look like? Is it the beta gamma system?
Sorry?
What kind of FS algebra is that?
You mean this thing? This thing?
Yeah, this thing.
So this thing is just a vertex algebra. So this is just.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah, this is just Royce's vertex algebra. So this is like not this is nothing fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then these things are sub-vertex algebras. And then you might hope that you could do this doubling construction sort of inside this vertex algebra. And so this is sort of, yeah.
And this would give you a subalgebra of the vertex algebra or a subalgebra of
Ideally the thing is so in the doubling construction you sort of have like U of B times U of B minus like surjects into surjects into U of G, and then the quotient by U of H gives you U of G. And then you might hope that sort of you'd have a similar thing. So the vertex algebra attached to A tends to the vertex algebra attached to A in dimension one, absent the vertex algebra in BBA. You might hope to get something like this.
Because attached to Fourdrinian equal to, so you mentioned this vertex algebra is attached to Fourdrinian equal to gauge theories. Mm-hmm. And the character of the vacuum model of the vertex algebra can be written in a way that looks like the character of a double of a Koha. And that's why I would love to understand if there is a vertex algebra structure on the double of Koha.
Wait, sorry, did you say this is an affine vertex algebra thing? Did you say this is an affine vertex algebra phenomenon? I didn't quite catch what you said.
So you said there is this, you mentioned this chiral algebra for Fourdrinian equal to theories.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose that you look at the Fourdrinian equal to theory associated to Calabi-Yau.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can argue that the vacuum character of the vertex algebra looks like something that counts elements in the double Koha. So I was wondering if there is a nice vertex algebra structure on the double of Koha or something like that. But it's okay.
No way. I mean, the honest answer is I don't know. This is a future directions thing as opposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to ask another quick question.
Yes.
Could you tell me a bit about like simple examples of categories where you know what the quantum vertex algebra is?
Yes. I'll go back to the. None of this is written down, but there's sort of an expectation that this thing is in the representation of a quiver case. This sort of non-weak commutative vertex algebra will be something like this again. You would also expect, I also wrote down an explicit formula for the, for the vertex algebra structure on KMHs on the curve. It's a fairly simple combinatorial thing. So, is it this level of simplicity you wanted? And also, so this gives the Koha structure, and the vertex algebra structure, it's also a fairly explicit thing to work out.
This is the kind of thing I suppose I was hoping. There are known results which tell us that the Koha associated to resolved AD singularity can be expressed in terms of something involving that AD group. So is there any kind of, just wanted to get a feel for this for this version of the theory of Kohas. I'm wondering, is there anything like that?
Well, so the problem with this Koha of AD singularity, you mean like Brill-Moore, don't you?
Yes.
So I think this is a very confusing thing because I have been I think also maybe Dominic has been thinking for a while about how to actually get this story to work for in the Brill-Moore case. So there's no obvious way to get a vertex algebra structure in his sort of way in the Brill-Moore case. And So at present, it seems like this is special to a dimension one thing. However, there are various indications of how you might extend this to sort of to dimension two. So for instance, this thing about where you take the symmetrized X complex instead of just the X complex. So this is just the pullback of the X complex. So this is just the pullback of the X complex under the map. M times M going to the cotangent model of M times cotangent model of M. So this is Kieran Sheaves, this is some like Higgs. And so this might be a way that you could try to relate this dimension two stuff with these dimension one vertex algebras. But yes, I'm not exactly sure.
I see. How about the Gronovsky and Nakajima vertex algebra? You might imagine there's a connection with that.
Yes. Yes, you might imagine, but it is something that I think both me and Dominic have thought about for a little while, and it seems like quite hard to make work.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Are there any other questions? No? All right. Well, I Theo needed to go, I guess, give a linear algebra talk. I need to take my daughter to meeting. But thanks for the talk. I guess we'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.